Today we'll have a quick chat about Fuji's X-Trend sensor, a look at an exciting new channel on the TFTTF Slack, and we have questions from this gentleman.
This is Michael in Sydney on the other side of the big blue marble.
And from this one.
My name's Andy Kitchen from Photo 42.
About cataloging images, spot removal, and highlights, shadows, and midtones. This episode is brought to you by discoverthetopfloor.com. Join us in 2019 on a ship to photograph the amazing Arctic fjord landscapes and the northern lights up in Norway. Or come with us in June 2019 on our Silk Road tour to Kyrgyzstan, a photo tour along the old caravan route home to snow leopards and lynx with its amazing landscapes and horse riders, or join us in October 2019 for a breathtaking fall colors photo exploration to Transylvania, the home of Count Dracula. Find out more at discoverthetopfloor.com. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 829 for Thursday, June the 28th, 2018.
Tips from the top.
Welcome, it's Chris Bockwart. You're listening to Tips from the Top Floor. Slack. Have you been to the Tips from the Top Floor Slack lately? If you have not, then it might be time to go back there, because I just the other day received an email about a really cool initiative, a community initiative kicked off by Bob Stevenson. He opened a new channel named History, and he told me that he has this collection of photographic ephemera, as well as old cameras and things and historic darkroom equipment, and he has opened that channel to bring out old advertisements, old interesting stuff. So he has been posting for a couple of days there now, and I hope he keeps that up, and I hope everyone else chimes in as well, because it's just fun to look over this old photography stuff. At least for me, it is. Here's an ad for Rollei Flex. Here is a link to there's a cover of a Kodak reference handbook from 1949. There's an article about the importance of grain. It's just awesome that these kind of things happen, and the Tips from the Top Floor Slack is exactly the right place where these things should happen. And if you are interested in that, the link to how to get on the Slack is in the show notes. And of course, Rusty Russ, our CIO, will be very happy to invite you into the Slack. So that's cool. That's a cool initiative. This kind of stuff blows me away. So thanks, Bob. And thanks everyone else who helps kind of keep these things going. That's just, it's just awesome. Awesome community. Love you guys. New episode of The Future of Photography. First of all, thanks for the great feedback, everyone, when I put the iOS 12 episode on the other week. Seems to have struck a nerve. So thanks a lot. And there's a new episode out just this week, where Adrian and I talk about the future of X-Trends. X-Trends, Fuji's X-Trends sensor. If you don't have a Fuji camera, you will probably not know about this. If you're techie, you will probably know about this. Cameras, like the way they structure their sensor in red into red, green, and blue pixels. I'd say the vast majority of cameras use what's called a Bayer array. A Bayer array is a way of distributing red, green, and blue pixels in blocks of four with a specific order of red, green, blue, and green. So that's per block of four, it's 2 pixels of green, 1 red, and 1 blue. And the X-Trend sensor does that, but in a 6x6 pattern. It's different, and the advantages, as claimed by Fuji, is that that sensor doesn't produce any moiré patterns in thin repetitive structures, and for that reason it can do without an anti-aliasing filter. But Fuji also uses sensors with a Bayer array in even some of the top of the line cameras. So on The Future Photography episode 34, we're having a look at where this might be going with Fuji. And I'll link to that episode in the show notes. If you're not subscribed to The Future of Photography, that might be a good point to actually do that. Okay, Q&A episode this week. Let's kick it off with Michael.
Hi, Chris. This is Michael in Sydney on the other side of the Big Blue Marble. We've just passed our winter solstice, and although things are supposed to be getting warmer, they still feel pretty cold down here. One of the things we'll be doing is having a long weekend going up to the Blue Mountains and celebrating the Winter Yule Fest. This is something we do down in the Southern Hemisphere. While up in the mountains, I'll be taking some photos, and naturally, like any photographer, I'll probably take some photos on my phone as well. Which made me think, do you take your camera JPEGs and your pinhole camera images and feed them into Lightroom and catalogue them there? Thanks very much for the show, Chris. Bye now.
Thank you, Michael. Hello to Australia and happy Winter Yule Fest to everyone. The question is a very good one because I think everyone kind of has this problem, where to put what kind of photos. And I think we also, at least some of us tend to make a distinction between their, air quotes, proper camera and the phone camera pictures, because they are kind of different. And here in our household, we have a third category, which is the film photos, the analog pictures that get scanned and then have to live somewhere as well. And I think the distinction is kind of melting. We're at a point in time where there's a lot of change in photography, and there is a bit of a blurring of the lines between the proper pictures and the phone pictures and whatever other image material you get into your catalogs. But I know what you mean. I mean, there's your, someone might have an APS-C or a Micro Four Thirds or a full frame camera to take like the serious shots. And then there's this whole other bucket full of pictures with like all the snapshots taken with a phone. Now, look, your question is how you manage those? How do I manage those? And do they go in the same catalog? Now, the problem here, as I see it, is, I mean, the way this is organized, and it doesn't matter if you're on an iPhone or you are on Android, on an iPhone, you're likely to have this, your iPhone photos and your iOS photos in iCloud somewhere. If you're on Android, you might have Google Photos, but then Google Photos is also on the iOS, so you could have your photos uploaded there, and some people do that. But it's kind of different organizational systems, right? My, in quote, serious shots go into Lightroom, mostly into Lightroom, and my, for lack of a better word, snapshots go live in this whole iCloud universe because I'm an Apple user. That's its own bucket pretty much, and they also are different in another way. When I look at Lightroom, there's a lot more manual work to organize the photos. There's tagging, there's sorting them into collections, and there's rating and all this kind of stuff. And when I look at iCloud, everything kind of happens automatically. They're taking a lot of that and do it for you with automatic object recognition with GPS tagging, which still a lot of cameras don't have, or photographers don't enable it because it uses too much battery. And of course, if you have Adobe Creative Cloud, if you're subscribed to that, you're paying the monthly subscription, you can have the Lightroom app on your phone, on whatever smart device you take your photos, and have them automatically uploaded to your Lightroom catalog. But I'm just talking about me personally, and I'd love to hear if you do this differently. But for me personally, it kind of goes against the grain of the way I use these catalogs. Again, Lightroom for me is more like the serious work, and I'm working on books and I need to be able to find all my wide angle shots from the last 10 years, that kind of stuff. Whereas iCloud kind of has everything else. And most of my iOS shots kind of stay separate from Lightroom. So personally, I'm really selective there. But then Sometimes I manually copy specific photos from iCloud over to my Lightroom catalog. And here's why. While I would say the Lightroom side is more for the serious stuff when it comes to me, and it's rated by stars, and that library unfortunately is missing a lot of the shots that help to tell a story. You know, quick snapshots of a fun situation, an interesting street sign, stuff like that. Photos that, in my opinion, I don't think are too artistic, but that together with the more artistic shots can tell a really good story. And sometimes that is exactly what I want to do. So with some of my photo tours, that's what I've done. I've done my regular serious photo work in Lightroom and the tagging and everything. And then I went through my iPhone shots and selected the ones that I thought would add to the story. And then I exported those from Apple Photos and imported them into Lightroom. It's a manual process. That means I won't really do it regularly. But at least for specific projects, that's what I do. And for now, that's kind of okay for me to do it this way. All right, this episode is supported by Portfolio Box. But hey, wait, instead of telling you the same stuff that I told you last week about how they are simple to use and how it's really easy to put together an awesome looking online portfolio and a shop and how you get your own domain and how they give free accounts to students, that's not this kind of ad. Let me just show you. Now, okay, I know it's a podcast, it's kind of impossible to show, but let me log into portfoliobox.net and let me quickly add a page right there, right now, while this ad is going. Okay, I click on new page. I tell them which kind of page I want. I want to create that as over 10 different kinds of 14 different kinds of things to choose from: a gallery, products page, a blog, contact page. Let's do a social page to show my Instagram photos automatically. Okay, it wants me to log into Instagram. And boom, done. Refresh the page. And wow, there we go. Now I have a page on my portfolio site titled Instagram that shows my photos from Instagram. It's literally, it's this quickly. This is amazing. So have a look yourself. It's at portfoliobox.chrismarkwert.com. Check it out there. And if you want to give it a try for free, here's a special deal for all of you. Get 20% off the first year of their pro package. Just go to www.portfoliobox.net/via/topfloor. That's www.portfoliobox.net/via/topfloor to get 20% off your first year pro plan. The link is in the show notes, and I thank them so much for the support.
Hey, Chris, my name's Andy Kitchen from Photo 42. I've asked a couple of questions before, and you've always been great with your answers. So I have another couple of questions for you. The first one is to do with the spot removal tool in Lightroom. And I understand all the way to operate the spot removal tool. I know you can press Command and select your own spot. You can press H as a keyboard shortcut and it'll outline the spot removal and the selection, and you can move them around and resize them. So I'm fairly familiar with the spot removal tool. The issue I have is when you let the tool automatically select a spot, and I know again you can use clone or heal as options, but it's how the spot removal tool actually selects the spot. I have been so confused by some of the spots that have been replaced when I've allowed the auto spot removal to work. You know, you just click on an area and let the software do the pre-select or the select a new area to replace it with. I've had like a spot on a model's face be replaced by a part of a window that was in the background. So it was, the contrast was out, the texture was out, it was hard lines as opposed to soft skin. And of course then you can press the backslash to replace that spot again and it'll choose something slightly different, but a micro fraction of a millimeter away from where the original spot was selected. So it's still the window covering the model's face, the spot I'm selecting. So my question is how does it ascertain where to select a spot from, and why doesn't it
do an awful lot better than what it appears to do in my case. There's question one. The second question...
Okay, let me answer that one first. Well, let me try to answer that one first, because, you know, some stuff in Lightroom is kind of mysterious, and my thoughts about this is, yeah, it does that. If you click... If you go into the spot healing or spot cloning tool, the Q key opens that one, and then you click on a blemish. It will, in 80% of the time, Lightroom will make a good choice. It will go and, like, for a blemish on the skin, click, done, taken care of. If you are a film photographer, you will use this tool a lot, and there's lots of dust specks that you have to clean out over time. If you have a spot of dust on your sensor, somewhere in the sky, it's one click and it usually does a good job. But then, as you said, in 20% of the time, at least for me, it's about 20%, it does a completely wacky selection. It does select something from a forest and puts it up in the sky, which, yeah, does not fit. And then you have the slash key, the forward slash key, that will move the selection and will kind of make a new automated choice, but that's again hit or miss. How it selects the spot, I don't know. I have no idea. It's a mystery, as it is for you. Maybe ask someone from Adobe about that. Okay, Adobe can do better. They have in Photoshop, they have better tools, and spot healing brush works with newer algorithms. My suspicion is that this feature has been the auto selection of that feature has been added somewhere early in Lightroom when that feature was introduced, and it has never been touched since because it was good enough. People weren't complaining about it too much. So that's I think how this goes. If enough people complain and say, "Hey, you guys, bring over some of your Lightroom fancy algorithms, your Photoshop fancy algorithms into Lightroom to make a better selection here," then there might be a chance for them to do something. But at this point, I think they optimize for a lowest possible number of complaints. And if they don't get complaints, why should they touch that feature? So just my two cents on that one. Let's go on to your second question.
The second question is all about the highlights, shadows, and midtones. When you select a photograph and it talks about the highlights, shadows, and midtones in the range of the photograph, is it actually talking about a specific light value, which is highlights, or is it talking about the value on the actual image you're sampling, the highlights, the brightest portions of that image, rather than a specific set of values irrespective of the image you're sampling? Gosh, they were complicated to ask. I hope you understood them, Chris, and thank you for your time, my friend. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Andy. I'm trying to understand. I don't think there's like a universally defined nomenclature for what highlights, shadows, and midtones mean. I think it's based on the image that you're looking at. But there's at least some consensus, I think. If you look at a histogram, let's be a bit techie here and let's look at a histogram. Midtones are around the middle. That's why they're called midtones, and shadows are left of the midtones and highlights are right of the midtones. That, I think we can agree on that. Now, again, I don't think there's a clear definition of how far those reach, where those boundaries are. But if you look at Lightroom has actually split that entire exposure range into five zones. Not just the three zones, it's five. If you, it's easiest to see if you move your mouse over the histogram in Lightroom from left to right, you'll see that there's the midtones in the middle that are linked to the exposure slider. And then there's the highlights and shadows, which are called that way in the software, and which I think are the zones in which you still have plenty of detail. I think that's what distinguishes them from the midtones. They are clearly brighter or darker than the midtones, and they have a lot of detail. That's important if we go into the next two, and that's the blacks and the whites, which are beyond the highlights and the shadows. It's the edge of the spectrum that the sensor can, of the brightness spectrum that the sensor can still see and put in a picture. There's not much detail in the blacks and the whites in the edges of that histogram, and they border on overexposure and underexposure, pretty much. And You can influence those areas by using the according sliders in Lightroom in the develop module, or by just grabbing the respective zones in the histogram and moving them around. Yes, you can grab that histogram directly. But again, I think this is all based on the image that you have, or rather the dynamic range of the sensor that you shot that with. And in the end, I would suggest not to try to overthink this whole thing. Just go with your gut. If you have a reasonably well profiled monitor and you can, within reason, rely on what your screen shows you, I think going with your gut is probably the best idea here. All right. Quick reminder before we end the show, I want your questions here too. I do these Q&A episodes every now and then. And here's how this works. Pick up your smartphone, fire up any voice recording app that you have, then record something and send it to me, to voice@tfttf.com. And here's a pro recording tip from a guy who used to be a recording engineer. If you want to sound especially good, hold the phone as if you were doing a phone call. That makes it sound the best. That's what these microphones are made for. And then send it to voice@tfttf.com and I will make you sound even better with my magic audio tools that I have. So looking forward to hearing from you, voice@tfttf.com. And that was it for this episode of Tips on the Top Floor. Thank you so much for supporting the show, for being around, for just being an awesome, awesome community. And again, don't forget to check out the history channel on the TFTTF Slack. It's awesome. Also, big thanks to Portfolio Box for sponsoring this episode. And don't forget to check out discoverthetopfloor.com for the new tours and for the existing ones in fall this year. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, sound partner Hans Peter Kagrud Publishing, and Slack Challenges by Release Pixie, Matt Ravsitar, Armstead, Slack Imitations by Chief Imitation Officer CIO Rusty Russ. The link to get on the Slack is in the show notes. My name is Chris Marquardt. You'll find me on social media at Chris, MarquardT. Go out and take amazing photos. Be nice to each other. And happy shooting. I feel like everybody knows.